This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden has proposed to Russia a five-year extension of a nuclear arms treaty that is otherwise set to expire in February. Biden proposed the extension even as he asked the intelligence community to look closely into Russia's cyber attacks, its alleged interference in the 2020 election, and other actions. Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters Russia has said for some time that it would welcome an extension of the New START treaty, which limits the number of U.S. and Russian strategic nuclear weapons. The Trump administration made a late bid to extend that treaty, but its conditions were rejected by Russia. Public health experts are blaming a vaccine push by the Trump administration for the current shortage of doses that is leading to inoculation cancellations. We get more from AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
A Trump administration campaign this month to get states to expand their vaccination rates and reach millions of people ages 65 and over had a flaw. It didn't provide the doses needed to meet the demand, leading to frustration and confusion at the state and local level. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
Obviously, in a contradiction where you want to open something, but there's no vaccine to go with it, it sends kind of a false hope to people.
The Association of State and Territorial Health Officials is blaming a lack of steady federal leadership, something the Biden administration vows to change.
We'll move heaven and earth to get more people vaccinated for free.
I'm Jackie Quinn.
Meanwhile, U.S. President Joe Biden moved swiftly to coordinate a federal effort to fight the COVID-19 pandemic Thursday, his first full day in office, which with steps to expand testing and vaccinations and increase mask wearing. At a White House event, Biden said the rollout of the vaccines has been a dismal failure so far. He signed executive orders Thursday will establish COVID-19 testing and more. This is VOA News. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. infectious disease expert, said Thursday that based on recent seven-day averages, coronavirus infections may be about to hit a plateau in the United States. COVID-19 has spiraled out of control for months in the United States, even with a massive vaccination campaign underway. The U.S. death toll has exceeded 400,000. At the White House news briefing, Fauci also said coronavirus vaccines can be modified to account for new variants of the virus, and that while the South Africa variant is concerning, it does not appear to be in the United States. Another highly transmissible variant of the virus first discovered in the United Kingdom has spread to at least 20 U.S. states. Fauci said he expects current vaccines will be effective against the recently discovered virus mutations. The United States still has a limited ability to track the presence of new variants in its population, though. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says that hotspots of COVID-19 infections in the European Union will be labeled dark red zones, and travelers from those areas will be required to take a test before departure and undergo quarantine. She said that with infections rising and contagious variants of the virus spreading fast, non-essential travel should be strongly discouraged within the EU, but essential workers and goods must be able to cross borders smoothly. The U.S. Senate Republican leader wants more time before the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump begins. We get more from AP correspondent Mike Rossia.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell favors pushing back the start of former President Donald Trump's impeachment trial to February in order to give Trump time to stand up his legal team and review the case. McConnell held a call with fellow Republican senators Thursday. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer told reporters,
"Make no mistake about it. There will be a trial. There will be a vote up or down on whether to convict the president. I believe he should be convicted."
House Democrats voted to impeach Trump last week for inciting the January 6th Capitol riot. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi could send the article of impeachment to the Senate as soon as Friday. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Islamic State militants could have launched the twin suicide bombing that killed at least 28 people and injured dozens more in Baghdad and a market Thursday, the first such attack in years, according to Iraq's civil defense chief. The Iraqi military said two attackers wearing explosive vests had blown themselves up among shoppers at a crowded market in a square in central Baghdad. Iraqi forces continue to fight remaining Islamic State militants and are working to secure the border with Syria, across which the group has often moved personnel. Police sources said Iraqi security forces had been deployed and key roads blocked to prevent further attacks. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, January 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Bobby Wine's lawyers asked the court for his release from house arrest.
It is neither a crime to stand for president nor one to challenge the election's results in court. This continued confinement is politically motivated and a blatant violation of their human rights.
Some Kenyan families of the ill-fated Ethiopian Flight 302 say they are under attack over compensation money. An in-depth look at the Africa Free Trade Area, no easy path to Burkina Faso's national reconciliation, and a new report says nearly half of Christians murdered last year were Nigerians.
What is happening in Nigeria is the persecutor crying out and claiming that he is the victim. And it is because a Muslim is in power that the cry of persecution is so loud.
And COVID-19 and public health in Mali. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Uganda, lawyers representing opposition leader Robert Chakulai, also known as Bobby Wine, have asked a court to order his release from a week-long de facto house arrest. State security has prevented anyone from entering or leaving Wine's home since he alleged fraud in last week's re-election of President Yoweri Museveni. State prosecutors say that Wine's family members can come and go as they please and that the detention is for his protection, a claim denounced by the opposition and rights activist. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
The state prosecutors presented the court with a sworn affidavit from the Inspector General of Police alleging crimes committed or yet to be committed by Robert Chagulanyi, better known as Bobby Wine, citing protests on November 18th and November 19th in which 56 people were killed. Authorities say they want to avoid a similar scenario if and when Wine is allowed to move around freely. According to prosecutors, the National Unity Platform party leaders have been training its supporters in the art of sustaining riots in the event Wine is not announced as the winner of the January 14th elections. Since the election, Wine and wife Barbara Itungo have been denied access to family, lawyers, donors, and U.S. Ambassador Natalie Brown, who was blocked Monday from seeing them. The state argues that if Wine is allowed to go free, lives will be put at risk and his actions will be intended to destabilize the peace. The government maintains that Wine's detention is for his protection and aimed at preventing violence nationally. Martin Mwambutsia, the state attorney, asked the court to set stringent conditions to ensure standard operating procedures are followed to avoid the spread of the COVID-19 illness if Wine is allowed to leave home.
That the applicant has been flouting the COVID rules, he has declared violence. He should denounce those kind of things and abide by the law.
Wine was runner-up in the election that saw longtime President Yoweri Museveni win a sixth term. Wine's lawyer, Medad Segona, said a bail application for his client has nothing to do with the police and does not need their permission. He says Wine is under illegal detention and that the family should be allowed to move about freely.
His rights took place when Chagulanyi was in detention. So even the criminality, if at all, of the riots committed while the man was in prison is attributed to him as if he arrested and detained himself. My Lord, this application is dealing with the legality of incarceration, whether the detention is lawful or not. We submitted that it is unlawful.
In a statement, Amnesty International is demanding that the Ugandan authorities immediately lift the police and military siege of Wine's home and release him and his wife. Roland Ebole, Amnesty's regional researcher, called on the Ugandan government to cease and desist from what Ebole called the abusive practice of arbitrarily detaining opposition leaders without charge.
It is neither a crime to stand for president nor one to challenge the election's results in court. This continued confinement is politically motivated and a blatant violation of their human rights. It must be lifted immediately.
A ruling on the matter has been set for January 25th. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Some Kenyan families of the victims of Ethiopian airline Boeing 737 MAX say they are living in fear of attacks following news that they have received millions of dollars in compensation from manufacturer Boeing Company. Flight 302 en route to Kenya crashed in March 2019, soon after takeoff from Addis Ababa Airport, killing all 157 people on board. The families of the victims say extended family members and strangers have made trips to their homes demanding money. Some have had to flee their homes. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, lawyer Irungu Kaganta, representing a number of Kenyan families, says some of the families have not been compensated because of internal family wrangles.
The Kenyan case is the first Ethiopian Air Flight 302 case to be settled from many of other lawsuits filed in a U.S. federal court in Chicago against Boeing on behalf of victims' families. One of the victims' family, a Kenyan John Karanja, who lost five of his family members in the 2019 crash, has been in hiding since the news broke in Kenya last month that one of the Kenyan families who lost their loved ones and agreed to settle the case with Boeing out of court has been compensated more than $3 million. He said the news has put most of them who have not received any compensation in danger, and that in the forum they formed as families of the victims, most of the families have expressed safety concerns, as some have been forced to move to unknown places for fear of attacks.
In danger. I wish you would see the communications that are taking place on our forum. Although there was such a thing that happened, and a person from Omati was tortured to death, something that had been paid. So, false reports are putting us in danger. None has been compensated, except maybe those that were in U.S., but those that were in diaspora, none has been compensated.
The affected families feel that the Boeing's move to recertify 737 MAX is heartbreaking and insensitive to the plight of all the families that lost loved ones. Kenyan lawyer representing some families, Irungu Kangata, said that most of the families have not been compensated due to internal family wrangles. However, there are those that have been paid some amount of money by Boeing as an ex gratia.
An ex gratia payment or just a free money that was being given by Boeing without any strings attachment. It was about 15 million Kenyan shillings per family. Again, that has been paid to families, but I'm also aware of several families where that has not been done because of internal wrangling. That money was being paid through lawyers, and most of the families that I do represent have received.
Kangata said that the airline should follow due process to ensure the safety of the people, as many are scared following the consecutive crashes.
The families of the deceased passengers are apprehensive that the airline may have been certified to fly again without all steps being adhered to. And again, they would have been more comfortable if major assurances were given to the families. But on the other hand, I think it does not suit the interests of the families to ground the airline in a manner that is no longer profitable.
The Nairobi-bound flight crashed shortly after takeoff from Addis Ababa Bole International Airport in March 10, 2019, killing 149 on board, among them 32 Kenyans and 30 nationals. Experts say the Boeing's reputation will suffer consequences of the multiple crashes involving its planes. Last month, December 2020, the Federal Aviation Administration and regulators across the world certified the Boeing 737 MAX plane to fly again after 20 months of grounding following two crashes, one involving Ethiopian Airlines and the Indonesian Air. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Milwaukee, USA.
The latest report by the U.S.-based Christian persecution watchdog Open Doors says the number of Christians killed in 2020 increased by 60%. The group says almost half of the nearly 5,000 Christians murdered globally were killed by Nigerian Islamists. Open Doors said COVID-19 was also used as a tool to further repress Christians globally, including in Nigeria. Timothy Obiesu reports from Abuja.
The Open Doors 2020 report says that Nigeria became the world's biggest killing spot for Christians last year. The group says over 2,200 of 4,761 Christians killed around the world died in Nigeria because of radical Islamists. Open Doors CEO David Curry said the global focus on battling the coronavirus pandemic last year also contributed to an increase in Christian persecution. But Nigerian Muslim groups say the report is promoting a false impression. Ishak Akintola is the director at Muslim Rights Concern, or MURIC.
Nigerian Christians are not persecuted. What is happening in Nigeria is the persecutor crying out and claiming that he is being persecuted, claiming that he is the victim. And it is because a Muslim is in power that the cry of persecution is so loud.
Another U.S.-based organization, International Christian Concern, ICC, estimates 50,000 to 70,000 Christians have died in violent attacks in Nigeria over 18 years, mostly carried out by Boko Haram terrorists or arms-wielding gangs. Nigeria has been battling insurgents seeking to create an Islamic caliphate in the country's north for more than a decade. The conflict has also affected Nigeria's neighboring countries, but Akintola says violent groups have no affiliation with Islam.
There is nothing like that. Boko Haram is not a Muslim group. This is a fake and misled group, a group that has gone out of the bounds of Islam. There is nothing like a caliphate for a violent group.
Last month, the State Department designated Nigeria as a country of particular concern because of religious freedom violations based on a report by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. It says Nigeria's Christian communities have weathered particularly egregious attacks. Nigeria's Information Minister Lai Mohammed refutes the listing and calls it untrue. However, Christian organizations maintain Nigerian Christians are persecuted and say the Nigerian government is not doing enough to address the issue. Israel Akonji is the northern regional head of the Christian Association of Nigeria, CAN.
If you look at the Chibok case, you will discover that the Chibok school girls, many of them were Christians. The church is being persecuted. There are so many places where Christians will not be made to head certain institutions, even when they are very qualified.
Open Doors report says persecution will likely grow worse as the coronavirus pandemic continues. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 22nd. Over the decades, trade among African countries has been hampered by tariffs and cumbersome custom procedures. The African Continental Free Trade Area was created to sidestep that. Kent Mensah reports from Accra.
The trade agreement is intended to remove major trade restrictions on goods and services among countries within the African Union, with the goal of boosting intra-African trade and job creation. The Secretary General of the ACFTA, Wankele Mene, is optimistic the agreement will succeed with time, just as it took Europe some 60 years to achieve its current state of integration.
I have never heard of a trade agreement where, in that particular arrangement, every single country is ready on day one. I regret that as Africans, we are held to a much, much higher standard for how trade agreements should operate in practice.
54 African nations have committed to join ACFTA, and 34, including Ghana, Kenya, Rwanda, Egypt, South Africa, and Nigeria, have ratified the agreement. But more are still holding on to laws that hinder free trade. Wankele Mene explains that will not be an impediment.
Traders will not be penalized. There will be a system where you will be credited for the trade that has taken place since the 1st of January 2021. The credit may come in the form of a duty that is reduced. It is entirely up to the member states to decide how the reinvestment will be provided.
A World Bank report says some 30 million Africans could be lifted out of poverty if the trade agreement is effectively implemented, but there are fears it will have a heavy toll on small businesses on the continent. Nana Osebunsu, the head of the Private Enterprise Federation, An association of private businesses in Ghana says many of those businesses know little about ACFTA and aren't sure how to prepare themselves.
If we don't do the right things, give me 2 years, Ghanaian economy will be collapsing because the competition will sweep everything out of our lanes and businesses cannot perform and jobs are going to be lost.
Economist Peter Korte says trade officials have to comprehensively review the effect of the ACFTA so they know which industries are going to be affected. Korte believes that all things being equal, ACFTA will be a game changer and the continent is on course to create wealth for its people.
There has to be conscious effort to expand the networks. There has to be conscious effort to expand the share of trade. And I'm sure with a lot of education, a lot of awareness, a lot of support mechanisms, the objectives of the ACFTA can be realized.
The world will be watching as Africa moves to implement the massive trade agreement. Kent Mensah for VOA News, Accra.
As Mali experiences its second wave of COVID-19 cases, Doctors Without Borders workers in the country say a worrying factor is that there seem to be more severe cases this time around. Florence Ozuro, COVID-19 coordinator in Bamako for Doctors Without Borders, spoke to Ricky Shryak about public health in the Malian capital.
When we were looking into the hospitals, we could see that there were quite a lot of people in the intensive care units, which was the biggest difference compared to the first wave, where you had like mostly, simple cases of COVID-19. This time we see quite a lot of people with severe conditions. So there was quite an increase since mid-November. December, or like the hospitals in Bamako were quite full with COVID cases, and now it's decreasing a little bit since 1 or 2 weeks, but still the intensive care units are still quite full.
What do you think the difference might be in this second wave that might explain the increased intensity of the cases, and is there any chance that people are more likely to seek treatment in this second wave because of communication about the illness, because people are more familiar with it?
We think there are different things. First, like the first wave was more like imported cases from outside, but this time, even between the two waves, hospitals, they always had cases of COVID-19. So it's much more within the communities in Bamako and in the country in general. Then there is a question on the cold season. Nowadays with the Ramadan, we think that maybe people are in more in closed areas, so the virus is circulating much more. Also, like, okay, so people, they're aware of COVID-19. When we discussed with the population in the area of Bamako, some people, they don't believe in the COVID-19. It's not everybody wearing masks as well. So we think like it's one of the reasons as well that the virus is circulating a lot in the community.
How is this affecting other endemic illnesses as well?
In regards with malaria, there was a really huge peak this year due mainly to heavy rain during the malaria season. Now it's pretty much over. It's a month, so it's decreasing a lot.
That was Florence Ozuro, COVID-19 coordinator in Mali for Doctors Without Borders. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bamako. Burkina Faso's re-elected President Roch Kabore has appointed a minister for national reconciliation as part of a vow to end the country's ethnic and political conflicts that are fueling terrorism. However, resolving deep-rooted tensions over land and power between the ruling ethnic Mossi and the ethnic Fulani, who are often labeled as terrorists, will not be easy. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
The Fulani are semi-nomadic herders living across Africa's Sahel region, including Burkina Faso's north, where Islamist terrorists gained a foothold in the last decade. Due to recruiting among the disgruntled, rights groups say the Fulani are often labelled as terrorists and subject to abuse or even execution. Daouda Diallo heads the Burkinabe rights group Collective Against Impunity and the Stigmatization of Communities.
Nous sommes dans un pays aujourd'hui.
He says the country is in a situation today where some people think they're more Burkinabe than others. Diallo says they go about killing their neighbours with impunity. The US State Department last year issued a report implicating the government in abuses, including extrajudicial killings and violence against ethnic minorities. In September, three Fulani teenagers say a government-trained militia targeted them while they were on their way to school. One 16-year-old, who for security reasons does not wish to use his name, says the armed men stopped their school bus. He says only Fulanis were told to get off the bus. They were whipped with a motorcycle brake cable, he says, and questioned about fellow Fulanis, who the militia said were killing people. He says the men accused them of reporting information to terrorists about planned military assaults. The teenager showed a reporter a 25-centimeter scar across his back that he says was from the beating. Request for comment from Burkina Faso's military police on the allegations of abuse went unanswered. Rights groups say the discrimination helps terrorists recruit more fighters, even though the Fulani are suffering the brunt of Islamist attacks. Burkina Faso's president, Roch Kabore, at his December inauguration for a second term, vowed to focus on national reconciliation. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with results from matches played on Thursday at the ongoing Chan tournament currently holding in Cameroon. Congo and Niger played an entertaining 1-1 draw, while in the other Group B game, Amadou Massasi's stoppage time goal was just enough to snatch a 1-1 draw for the Democratic Republic of Congo against Libya. The result means two-time winners DR Congo are top of the group with 4 points, while Niger and Libya are tied at second with 2 points apiece, while Congo are bottom of the group with 1 point. Friday matches will feature Group C, where the leaders Morocco will face Rwanda, and later Ugandan Cranes will meet Togo. A win for Morocco will secure a direct ticket to the quarterfinals. Morocco and Uganda seem to be favorites to lead the group, but Rwanda seems poised to outperform Morocco in Friday's match. The Cranes, who drew 0-0 against Rwanda in Group C's opener, need a win against Togo if they are to keep their hopes alive of a place in the next round. Togo were defeated by Morocco in their respective encounter, and that makes Friday's clash even more important in terms of survival for both sides. And on to basketball, where Rwanda's national basketball team has started residential training ahead of the upcoming FIBA AfroBasket 2021 qualifiers window 2, scheduled for February 17th to the 21st in Tunisia. The team is camping at the El Vante Hotel in Nyarantuntarama under the leadership of head coach Henry Nguyunka and his assistant Karim Nkusi. This arrangement is to help the team train in the wake of government's new COVID-19 preventive measures, where the city of Kigali was placed under lockdown and sports activities halted. In swimming news, the Indian and South African Swimming Federations on Thursday signed a milestone partnership agreement to further jointly develop swimming and water polo in their respective countries. The agreement will see South African and Indian teams participate in competitions against each other. In addition, a key part of the agreement will see the Indian team participate in joint training camps in South Africa with the South African national team. Elsewhere in Rwanda, the country's top two swimmers, Ishak Irankunda and Eloy Maneguruha, have been awarded a 1-year scholarship by the World Swimming Governing Body, FINA, to train at the High Performance Swimming Center in Russia. The two athletes departed Kigali for Kazan, Russia on Wednesday and will be joining other top swimmers in training as they prepare for the Tokyo Olympics and the FINA World Championship. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.